This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, November the 2nd, 2012. Hello and a warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending November the 2nd, 2012, which this week have been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and your readers are Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
Now on to this week's announcements, which will start with what's on, as usual. At the Discovery Centre on Friday, November the 9th, is Norman Lovett, and that's at 7:30pm for over 18s. And the telephone number to contact is 01962 873 603. The number again, 01962 873 603. And then a lovely treat at the Mayflower in Southampton. Until Saturday, November the 3rd, there is a performance of the Welsh National Opera's Puccini La Bohème, and that starts at 7:15. If you're lucky enough to get a ticket, and it's well worth seeing, the box office number is 02380 71181 02380 711811. And then following that, the next week, the famous Agatha Christie play The Mousetrap goes into the Mayflower, and that's from Monday to Saturday, November the 5th to the 10th, 7:30pm, and matinees at 2:30pm. And the number again for booking at the Mayflower, 02380 711811. At the Theatre Royal in Winchester, another opera, this time The Merry Widow, by the Winchester Operatic Society. That begins on Tuesday, November the 6th until the 10th, 7:30 with a matinee at 2:30 on Saturday. The Merry Widow again. Following that, on November the 11th, a Sunday, is Jason and the Argonauts. And there is a pre-show discussion for that at 4pm. Performance goes up at 5:30. So that's the Merry Widow and Jason at the Argonauts at the Theatre Royal. Box office number 01962 840 440. And again, 01962 840 440. And here's an item headed Cathedrals, Heroes and Villains. A new booklet, Heroes and Villains of Winchester Cathedral, is being launched with two tours of the church. The tours will be on November the 12th and the 19th at 1:30pm. And will be led by the book's authors, Pat Thornhill and Anna Withers of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. They will detail stories of famous characters, including a queen, great bishops, master masons, rebellious monks and courageous priors. Places are limited, so booking is essential by contacting Sarah Williams on 01962 857 225, or if you can, by emailing sarah.williams@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. I'll give you both that again, and please note that the spelling of Sarah is S-A-R-A-H. So it's 01962 857 225, or emailing sarah.williams@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And it's always my pleasure to talk about the Christmas market outside the cathedral, and here's advance notice. that it opens on Thursday, the 22nd of November. The chalets are already there. And it closes on Sunday, the 23rd. So it's open on Thursday, the 22nd of November, every day from 10 a.m., closing at 6 p.m. And then Sundays to Wednesdays at 7:30, Thursday to Saturday. And as you know, it's well known for its unique location, and it's worth a visit just to walk round and take in the atmosphere of Christmas a little bit early. And the final item I've got for you, lots of what's on this week, is Winchester Area Access for All is a forum for highlighting difficulties, especially those with disabilities, when accessing facilities in and around Winchester. It asks, how accessible is Winchester? And this is your chance to ask a panel of experts about transport, policing and health services, etc. That is on Friday, the 16th of November, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And it's at the Pastoral Centre at St Peter's Church, Jury Street, Winchester. If you need the postcode, it is SO23 8RY. That's the Pastoral Centre at St Peter's Church, Winchester. For further information, here is two telephone numbers: 01962 871 710 or 01962 855 016. The website, if you can access that, is www.waafa.org.uk. And that's on the 16th of November, 2 to 4 p.m, Winchester Area Access for All. And that's all the announcements for now. Now we're going to move on to lighting up time in the week when the clocks turned back an hour. On Friday, the 2nd of November, the sun rose at 7:01 a.m. and set at 4:38 p.m. On Wednesday, the 7th of November, lighting up time will end at 7:10 a.m. and begins again at 4:29. Now, if you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker, as usual, on 01962 862 8. And do remember, if you prefer not to listen to any particular item on the recording, just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now, the main headlines this week are: County Council hires new £83,000 a year executive. Crime tops agenda as bid wins second term. 1.5 million cost of missed hospital appointments. And Jerry will start us off with the story behind the first headline, please.
County Council hires new £83,000 a year executive. County Council bosses have hired a new £83,000 executive, just a year after culling senior managers. David Fletcher, 47, has been appointed to the post of Assistant Director for Economic Development, with a brief to boost the local economy and tackle the credit crunch. Just 12 months ago, Alison Quant took early retirement from her £140,000 Director of Economic Development post. Her job was axed, and the Economic Department merged with the Environment and Transport Department as a cost-cutting measure. Now, the new taxpayer-funded position has been created by Tory council chiefs in a bid to bring clear direction and impetus to develop Hampshire's economy. Mr Fletcher will be paid up to £83,000 plus contributions to his final salary pension worth thousands more. His appointment comes against a backdrop of the council's cutting the number of managers by 25%. The local authority had 359 managers earning between £50,000 and £125,000 in March 2012, compared to £451,000 the previous year. By April 2014, the County Council will have 1,700 fewer staff than in 2010, with net savings of £46 million on its salary bill. But the new post has been slammed by an anti-tax group as sending out the wrong messages at a time of general belt tightening. Christine Melson, founder of Is It Fair, said, "His pay and pension will be worth nearly £100,000 a year. The last thing local taxpayers need is a big bill for a new council manager. It's sending out the wrong message. We're all having to tighten our belts, and the council should too." Bosses at the County Council said Mr. Fletcher would lead a drive to increase Hampshire's economic prosperity, including inward investment, tourism and enterprise. His role will involve working with other local authorities, the Solent and Enterprise M3 local enterprise partnerships. Mr. Fletcher, a father of two, has spent the past 10 years working as head of an economic development body in Sheffield. Other previous posts include a senior business development role in the property and construction sector with Wimpey. County Council leader Ken Thornber said, "We have reduced the number of senior managers across the county by 25%, saving millions of pounds on our pay bill and reducing overheads as part of our £100 million cost reduction programme. The previous Director of Economic Development retired and was not replaced. The Assistant Director for Economic Development post was kept vacant during this cost reduction process. Therefore, with the national focus on promoting economic development and growth, the County Council sees this as a priority requiring operational leadership through the existing vacancy for an assistant director, hence the recent recruitment. Economic development is important to us all, and it would be a mistake to assume that any area can take economic success and prosperity for granted." Councillor Keith House, leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group on the County Council, said, "The proof for or against this new post will come out against the number of jobs created and the amount of extra growth in the Hampshire economy."
Crime tops agenda as bid wins second term. Businesses back another five-year scheme to enhance city. Tackling city centre crime will be one of the priorities in the second term for Winchester's Business Improvement District, BID. The scheme was celebrating winning another five-year term in the city after businesses backed its renewal by voting more than 2-1 in favour. The turnout was 44%, with 367 of the 844 members voting. There were 265 yes votes to 102 noes. Some 72% of those voting were in favour, or 83.5% by rateable value. The postal ballot was coordinated by Winchester City Council. Chris Turner, the BID's chief executive, said it would get straight back to work tackling crime in the city from shoplifting to criminal damage. He said, "A lot of people want guaranteed protection, whether it's the safety of their shops in the evening or staff walking to car parks in the dark. People want to feel safe." Professor Turner added the new Crime Reduction Partnership, CRP, with the police and council would help keep offices safe. He said, "We are looking forward to really cracking on with the CRP. It's going to be very important. Lots of businesses are getting excited, like estate agents and offices, because it means if they do encounter any trouble, like criminal damage, they can ring the police and know that someone will be on their way quickly to do something about it." The BID already runs PubWatch and ShopWatch schemes, which allow shops and bars to keep in touch via radios and warn of shoplifters or troublemakers. Professor Turner said other second-term aims would include bidding for local government projects like business advice services and helping traders reduce their utility bills. The result means businesses will pay an extra 1.5% on their non-domestic rates for the next 5 years. The money, collected through Winchester City Council, is given back to the bid to invest in a range of ring-fenced schemes such as street management, community safety and marketing projects. Jeremy France, jeweller and chairman of Winchester Bid, said he was delighted that businesses had again backed it. He said, "This is excellent news, not just for Winchester businesses, but for the city as a whole. The money raised by the bid levy will be reinvested back into the city towards projects such as chewing gum cleaning, graffiti removal, marketing campaigns, sponsorship of 3 police community support officers, and more hanging baskets." Professor Turner added, "This is a good outcome for the city. The work that the bid has done over the past 5 years has meant that Winchester is trading successfully, is safer, more attractive, cleaner and greener than it would otherwise be." But he admitted, the bid had received some complaints from small businesses because they felt their levy was too high proportionally. "We do recognise that there is a pressure on small businesses at the moment, and we shall absolutely make sure that we will continue to provide excellent value for money," added Professor Turner. And the article is illustrated by a photograph with Winchester Bid's Emma Schotter, Catherine Turness, Executive Director Chris Turner, Amy McCartan and Toby Jezzard celebrating.
1.5 million pounds cost of missed hospital appointments. 18,000 patients failed to turn up last year. Missed hospital appointments are costing Winchester's Health Trust thousands of pounds every month, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. It has emerged that around 1 in 10 appointments were missed at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, with 18,000 no-shows by patients since August last year. Patients failing to turn up also mean that other patients are likely to have their treatment delayed, said the hospital. Figures show the RHCH made 258,000 appointments since August 2011, and around 18,060 of those were missed. Each missed appointment is estimated to cost the hospital trust between £60 and £120, which is based on government tariffs set for outpatient attendances and takes into account other factors, including staffing costs. It also emerged that Winchester patients are slightly more likely to miss follow-up sessions at 7%, compared with 6.5% for initial consultations. In the same period, Basingstoke Hospital made just over 354,000 outpatient appointments, with around 25,700 of these missed. Patients at Basingstoke are also slightly more likely to attend new appointments, with around 6% missing their initial appointment, compared with 8% not turning up for follow-up sessions. Across hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, all of which are now run by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, that is HHNFT, the cost of missed appointments since August last year amounts to at least £1.5 million. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of HHNFT, said, "It is disappointing when people don't attend their appointments because the time could be offered to another patient who needs it. However, we recognise that there will sometimes be reasons why patients can't attend. It would be helpful if patients could let us know. We are looking into a variety of ways to remind patients about their appointments in the future, as well as seeking to take more of our services out into the community to make it easier for patients to access them. Sometimes patients, particularly if they have appointments booked months in advance, can forget all about them. We use texts and emails to remind patients about their appointments. Mrs. Edwards said a new outpatients department in the Burrell Wing, due at the RHCH, set to open early in 2013, would provide a more pleasant environment in future. Health chiefs say they are looking at different ways to tackle the number of missed appointments as encouraged by the government. To let the RHCH know about appointments which cannot be met, call the main reception on 01962 863 535. 01962 863 535. And there's a picture of the Chief Executive, Mary Edwards, alongside the hospital.
Thank you. And we'll move on now with our usual programme. We're beginning with death notices and then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor and historical items, your say, chronicle comment and first person. Death notices. Bell, Kenneth Bell, peacefully in hospital on the 23rd of October, aged 84. Boyles, William Grosser Boyles, on the 23rd of October, aged 56. Cross, Albert John Cross, on the 26th of October, aged 86. Drake, Alfred Nicholas Drake, peacefully in hospital on the 21st of October, aged 89. Freeland, Lieutenant Colonel Simon Charles Freeland, MBE, RE, suddenly on the 22nd of October, aged 55. Johnson, Harold Roy Newell Johnson, late of Alsford, suddenly in hospital on the 21st of October, aged 82. Kirby, Joan Kirby, peacefully, 27th of October, age 83. Mattia, Anne Mattia, peacefully, 25th of October, aged 64. Williams, Katrina Williams, suddenly, but peacefully, on the 22nd of October.
Christian comment is entitled, Let's Celebrate the Living Saints. November begins with a celebration of All Saints or All Hallows, when we remember not only the famous saints who are stars in the church's calendar, including those from Winchester, but the many hidden heroes and heroines whose courage and goodness has never been recorded. The entire month, beginning with All Souls Day, is also a month of remembering our dear ones who have gone before us, as well as those who have been forgotten. Because the weather is turning colder and greyer, the trees losing foliage, and winter lies ahead, November can definitely feel gloomy. So it's interesting to know that All Saints' Day replaced the Celtic feast of Samhain, halfway between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice. Samhain, like Beltane, was seen as a time when the door to the other world opened enough for the souls of the dead and other beings to come into our world. Feasts were had, at which the souls of dead kin were beckoned to attend, and a place set at the table for them. Samhain has been compared with a festival of the dead. People also took steps to protect themselves from harmful spirits, which is the background to much of our Halloween activity. During this time and in this rural culture, it was the season when cattle were brought down from the hills for the winter. Those which could not be accommodated were slaughtered. So the bonfires we now often associate with Guy Fawkes get their name from bone fires, in which the indedible part of the carcasses were burnt. The fires are also linked with clearing the decks at the end of the year, with leaves and deadwood left over from summer, swept up and burnt. So, despite the gloom of November and approach of winter, there is much that is positive about this season. And amidst the shocking news recently, for example, about Jimmy Savile and cruelty in care homes, especially among the disabled and vulnerable, All Hallows is an invitation to be thankful for the goodness we know to be present in many hospitals and homes, manifested by many nurses and care workers here in Winchester and throughout our country. We also celebrate the places where disabled children and adults are welcomed, respected and cared for, such as in Larch Homes, founded by Jean Vanier, and most of all, the educators, parents and teachers who bring up children to experience healthy relationships. The living saints are also to be honoured, even if it is a drear night in November.
Thank you, and we're going to go to letters of to the editor now. Excuse me, I'm sorry. We're going to begin with Robin. We have 9 this week.
And the first letter is from Michael Mates, Conservative Police Commissioner candidate, and has the title, Promise on Which I Will Be Judged. Mr. Hargreaves asks, Hampshire, where is your voice? The answer is that the electors, all of them, not just Conservative members, were invited to make their choice from 6 candidates. Only the Conservative Party demonstrated accountability from the outset. Most of the other candidates were chosen only by their own supporters, with one simply an announcement by the party's leader. Over 200 voters spent the day in Fareham assessing the candidates. I don't believe I won because of my military background. That was nearly 40 years ago. But my experience in overseeing a police force, Royal Ulster Constabulary, during a time when they were under siege. I was responsible for setting their budget and strategic plan and overseeing the Chief Constable, all tasks which will fall to me should I be elected. I thought it right to tell of my decision to run with a prospective deputy, so voters will know what they're getting if they choose me. I considered a number of candidates, including the runner-up. Chris Brannigan was best choice. He offers considerable experience in working with police forces, UK and international, to complement mine, and he has unmatched experience of delivering scrutiny and accountability within the Army. The Police and Crime Panel, to whom I will account, will be asked to confirm his appointment if I am elected. So again, this is an effort to be open and transparent. I am becoming more convinced that the job entails much more than simply holding the Chief Constable to account. It involves all the arms of justice, safety and victim support in the 2 counties. I see it as being out in the community, listening to what people say, coordinating the efforts of all to make our citizens safer, to cut crime and reoffending. Having looked at how much the police authority has cost, some 7,714,000 over the last 5 years, I can now say that we are utterly determined the Commissioner's staff will cost less than the authority did, and any savings go straight back to the police themselves. That is a promise I make in advance, and on which I am prepared to be judged. Michael Mates, Conservative Police Commissioner candidate.
And this dissenting voice comes from Philip Morgan. I would like to appeal to your readers not to vote in the police commissioner elections. Why? We already have a complete range of elections for county, district and parish councils which act democratically for us. We do not need more elections. If we have elected commissioners, why not for health services, or schools, or transport and planning? These are just as important. How can one person change things, be master of it all, be able to stand up to the entire police force? And if he or she is very good, will an equally good person follow him or her? We need groups of people, not one person, to manage these things. How are we to know enough about the candidates to vote wisely? It's like voting for the National Committee of the WI or some national hobby organisation. Most people don't vote because they don't know who to vote for. These elections will be just the same. The government wants to reduce spending and reduce red tape. Having this new post will not save money nor reduce bureaucracy. The leaflet put through doors hardly tries to explain why we should vote, why things will be better with a commissioner, how it will help the chief constable to do his job, how it will cut crime. It even says the commissioner won't be able to decide how big his budget will be. County councillors could provide democratic control of the police as in the past. They also control services for children, roads, housing, etc. It's much better to consider these things together than to manage policing on its own. Elected police commissioners is narrow-minded and ill thought out, fragmenting the democratic government of Hampshire. Please boycott these elections. Do not vote. Philip Morgan, Killam Lane, Winchester.
And another letter on the subject from Don Brown of Old Alsford asks, where's the detail? On October the 26th, motivated by our PM, I visited www.choosempcc to help me choose who should have my vote for police commissioner. I found six candidates, all related to a political party and all offering virtually identical policies on their hopes for the police force. However, none gave details of management experience or relevant training. Surely, for such an important position of strategic management, we are entitled to know what relevant experience each brings to the electorate. Nothing less than a CV is really adequate. Don Brown, South Downs, Old Alsford.
And changing the subject, this letter from John Miller, headed True Champion of Arts in Hampshire. Sir, may I add to your obituary on Ron James, Chronicle, October the 25th? In addition to the Tower Arts Centre mentioned, he did much else to champion the cause of drama over nearly half a century in Hampshire. When we launched Winchester Festival in 1998, I was keen to reenact the trial of Sir Walter Raleigh in the Great Hall, where it took place. Ron immediately agreed to direct it, recruiting a cast of the best local actors, the festival players. Thereafter, he added his writer's pen to his director's baton, bringing alive episodes in Winchester's extraordinary history, from Alfred the Great to the saga of Queen Victoria's peripatetic statue and the exploits of Captain Swing. He had a nose for a good story, a great knowledge of local history, and an unerring eye for fine actors. One of the things I always looked forward to in my years as artistic director was the first sight of his new script and then its performance. Quiet and unassuming, he made a major contribution to the cultural life and will be much missed. John Miller, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
This letter is from Viv Morton and is headed Jobs Just Temporary. Having read the statement by Mike Emmett of Carla Holmes regarding the recent decision on Barton Farm, I must take issue with several of his comments. To say this development will create 8,000 jobs is misleading. These will be temporary jobs by subcontractors probably brought in from outside Winchester. To claim this will ease congestion on the M3 by people moving from Southampton and Eastleigh is not solving any housing problems in Winchester, but adding 4,000 cars to its already congested, historically narrow streets. Having just witnessed the air ambulance attending yet another accident at the junction of Wellhouse Lane and Andover Road, I fail to see how traffic lights on this junction, with cars speeding down Three Maids Hill, will help the accident statistics. This junction is already congested at peak hours, without the hundreds of extra vehicles this scheme will create. Given the vast amounts of infilling we've already witnessed in this beautiful and historic city, this immense development will change the face of Winchester forever. I'm afraid it could be a case of developer's greed, not need. Viv Morton, Hairstock Close, Winchester.
This letter from Robert Hutchinson is headed Pyrolysis Involves Unnecessary Risks. Sir, Chris White says the proposed Micheldever pyrolysis plant is not an incinerator. Letters October 25th. He should remember that pyrolysis comes from the Greek word for fire, and that such technologies are classified as incineration in the EU Waste Incineration Directive. They suffer the main defects of all incineration, competing for materials that should be recycled and composted, and are hungry for organic waste, paper and plastic. They produce hazardous gases and ash. Pyrolysis involves unnecessary risks. Residents of Micheldever are right to raise their concerns about the development proposed by Clean Power Properties Limited. In Hampshire, we incinerate too many useful and reusable resources. We should be expanding small, on-site, anaerobic digestion plants, not large ones with extensive lorry movements, like the one added to the Micheldever pyrolysis proposal. Such projects should involve more community ownership, rather than seeing profits leached away to distant, faceless owners. What is also needed is for banks to develop specialists who understand the new industry and enlightened local authorities and entrepreneurs to take it forward. Hampshire's energy and waste future requires green funds, not hedge funds. Robert Hutchison, Councillor, Winchester City, Clifton Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Alec Brown of SAFA Forces Help Hampshire and has the title Scars Last Long After the Battles Have Left the Front Pages. At this time of year, thoughts turn to the brave servicemen and women who made the ultimate sacrifice while serving our nation. recent conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq have brought added relevance to annual acts of remembrance. Increasingly, we remember not just battles long past, but families in our own communities who are mourning the recent death of a loved one. We also think about the bravery of those who now live with life-changing injuries and the families that support them. During the last century, British troops have seen action in many conflicts. But from their dwindling band of Second World War veterans and the National Service generation fighting in Korea, to Northern Ireland, the Falklands War and the campaigns in Bosnia and Kosovo, many veterans feel their sacrifices and those of their comrades have been forgotten. The mental and physical scars last long after the battles have left the front pages. The Hampshire branch of SAFR Forces Help provides a lifetime of support to servicemen and women and their dependents. We're here for them long after conflicts have become history. So, if you have ever served in our armed forces, including as a national serviceman or reservist, and you know someone who has and you need some support, then SAFR is here to help. We can be contacted on 02380 704978, 02380 704978, or secretary at hampshiresaffer.org.uk. Alec Brown, SAFR Forces Help, Hampshire, Shakespeare Avenue, Andover.
This letter from Sue Faulkner, who is chairman of Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club, is entitled One-Off Chance to Inspire Generation. When city councillors debate whether to replace or renovate River Park Leisure Centre, I trust they will take into consideration the facts that it lacks adequate facilities for competition or training for many sports, particularly basketball, gymnastics, netball, volleyball, swimming and indoor athletics. Cannot offer the pool time needed for lessons, schools, triathletes, water polo, synchronised swimming and club training. Needs at least £4 million for essential repairs and improvements, according to the council's own estimates. Is not easily accessible for much of the city and district community. Cannot cope with the increase in participation generated by the Olympics and Paralympics. Has little to entice participation. Well-designed individual changing rooms, good cafe or restaurant options, climbing walls, etc. Will not cope with the extra 2,000 houses designed for Barton Farm or any further development. Was not designed to last 40 years. Is energy inefficient, has a significant carbon footprint and does not benefit from modern technologies. Has inadequate parking and spectator seating. Does little to attract visitors. In short, the centre is not sustainable environmentally, socially or economically. However, the council should not make this decision on behalf of the local community alone, thereby missing the opportunity to work with partners and organisations. There is much on offer in Winchester. Strong support for the Fit for the Future initiative, thriving sports clubs, an excellent local university, schools and colleges, and a community keen to see facilities that reflect the passion for sport and leisure. Councillor Stallard is right to say the research should be done thoroughly, but it should not be done slowly. Further delay will squander the benefits of the Olympic legacy and cost more in the long term. Let's take advantage of the level of funding and support available and realise a one-off opportunity to truly inspire a generation. Sue Faulkner, Chairman, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club.
Ripped off at the railway station. Sir, I have serious concerns for the safety and fair treatment of users of Winchester Station amid the rip-off Britain mentality of South West trains and ring parking. First, the poor upkeep of the car park on the Andover roadside. Despite the fact that commuters pay £8 a day, the far side has no barrier between the edge and the deep gorge below. It will only be a matter of time before some tired commuter, senior citizen, or inexperienced driver will make a mistake and drive over the edge and down the steep slope. It is a death trap. Also, car park users are fined £50 for not parking in a designated space when there are no clear markings or they're covered by leaves. This is tantamount to extortion and must be illegal. It is constructive fining by allowing conditions to deteriorate. My second concern is the road from the car park to Andover Road. It is poorly lit and narrow, with no proper pavement. Giant weeds hit you in the face if it is windy. Puddles are so large you get sprayed by cars. I've seen pedestrians almost hit by 4x4s, cyclists pushed off the road. I myself have felt very threatened walking there at night after 9 p.m. I am grateful to be in a job and have only praise for the staff on the trains and at the station. But prices and parking have gone up above inflation while services worsen. I am sick of paying first world prices for a third world service and of feeling threatened and unsafe in the car park and road at night. Maybe South West Trains managers think all commuters are male. If they used the trains and car parks, they might move out of the Victorian era. This deplorable smash-and-grab attitude is compromising safety. Perhaps fellow commuters might help me take these issues further so we can stop this racketeering and prevent a serious accident. Dr. Josie Lewis, Dean Lane, Winchester.
Thank you. Thank you for all those letters. If you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle with an issue or a comment, you can ring 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or email at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Once again, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we're going to continue now with our historical items, starting 200 years ago in the year 1812. Mr. Johnson is arrived on the messenger with dispatches from America, which are of by no means a pacific nature. The disgraceful issue of the expedition to Canada has made the American president more determined upon continuing hostilities, with the hope of wiping off the stain upon the American councils. No terms of invective, no arts of delusion, no tales, however untrue, are spared against the British government. And the second item, 200 years ago. A newly discovered island in the latitude of about 58 south, named Macquarie Island, in compliment to the governor of the British possessions of Australasia, has opened an additional fruitful field to adventures in seal fishery. That's adventurers in seal fishery. And the enterprise of those individuals who prosecuted the fishing at Macquarie Island have been abundantly rewarded. Upwards of 80,000 seals had been caught at that island in the course of a few months.
100 years ago, 1912. Letters from bishops who had been asked if they approved of cinematograph films on the life of Christ have been received by the Daily Mail. The question having been prompted by the production of the film From Manger to Cross. The Bishop of Winchester writes, "I do not like giving opinions without knowing the circumstances more particularly, but I have the strongest suspicion of anything which would be practically a show of scenes from the Lord's life as a commercial venture." And the second letter from 1912. "It will be remembered that not long since, Mr. S.C. Bennett of the London Hampshire Society initiated an essay competition open to the elementary school children of the county on Hampshire from an historical point of view. Senior and junior shields will be awarded to the parliamentary division sending in the best 20 essays, together with gold, silver and bronze medals."
50 years ago, 1962. Better opportunities for children seeking education in the county grammar schools were urged this week by the Autumn Council of the Hampshire Federation of Women's Institutes. Approving a resolution by 109-94 vote, Council advocated an increase in grammar schools' places to keep pace with an expanding population. The resolution, put forward by Ramsdale WI, Basingstoke, was the highlight of the South Sea Conference and sparked off the liveliest debate of the session. The second item, news that instead of raising the 30-mile-per-hour limit through Otterbourne to 40 miles per hour, as suggested, the Minister of Transport proposes to remove the restriction altogether, caused a shock at Wednesday's meeting of Winchester Rural District Council. It was unanimously agreed to write to the Minister and the local MP, Mr. Peter Smithers, expressing the Council's surprise and alarm at the decision.
"25 years ago, 1987, living in a thriving city centre does not always mean being spared the miseries of isolation and loneliness. Neighbourhoods break down or young families move away, leaving those behind to a lonely life because they are either confined to home or cannot make new friends. This is one of the most poignant conclusions drawn by Esme Needham in Central Winchester, A Neighbourhood Profile." And the second paragraph, "Is the carnival over for Winchester? The week began with an unequivocal statement from the organisers that the ailing annual event would not take place in 1988. But the Mayor, Major Douglas Coville, has breathed some life back into the corpse. Carnival Chairman Bob Bristow said the apathy of the people of Winchester and local business had convinced organisers that their work is not worthwhile. In March, they warned that the event was in danger, and it was only after long discussion that a limited carnival was staged this year."
Thank you very much. And Jerry now will give the Hampshire Chronicle's Vox Pop column your say. Thank you.
And your say this week asked, "Are you in favour of protecting Winchester's green spaces or building new homes?" Penny Bullough, 58, a primary school head of Colden Common, said, "I'd have thought the first place to look to build new homes was town centres, with so many shops closing. That's better than green fields. Then you'd have people living right where the shops are and more likely to use them. Ron Williams, 81, retired Winchester City Council officer of Fox Lane Stanmore, said, "Well, we need both. It depends really on where they are and putting the new where they are putting the new homes. The most important thing is to make sure that the homes are affordable." Tara North, 34, part-time graphic designer of St John Street, Winchester, said, "They're both very important. There is a lot of pressure for new homes, and no matter how green a place is, people still need somewhere to live. If people want homes, that should be a priority." Paul Beardow, 53, chief technology officer of Easton, said, "I think you have to protect the environment, as that is what makes Winchester such an attractive place. New housing is not necessarily needed here. Developers often just want to put up executive homes, which don't help the community anyway."
Thank you very much. And now it's the Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment. Bid mandate bodes well for business. The news that city centre businesses have backed another five-year term for the Business Improvement District bid is a most welcome outcome to the vote. Bosses at the bid will now be able to build upon the many successes they've achieved over the past 5 years. The money raised by the bid levy will be reinvested back into the city towards projects such as chewing gum cleaning, graffiti removal, marketing campaigns, sponsorship of three police community support officers, and more hanging baskets, to name but a few. And making further inroads into tackling crime in the city centre will be a top priority this time around. Turnout for the vote may have been a little disappointing, but the vote was more than 2-1 in favour. A small but vocal minority of dissenting voices were raised on the issue of the cost of the levy to small businesses. But the fact remains that the city's retail and shopping experience would be the poorer were it not for the sterling work of the bid, and that benefits both small as well as large businesses. Winchester's bid is rightly seen nationally as one of the leaders, and it is good that it now has the mandate to make Winchester an even better place to shop and do business in the future. And now we're going to ask Robin to read First Person.
And First Person this week is by Khalid Aziz, with the title "A Creepy and Repellent Man." I was in Yorkshire between 1978 and 1982, when Jimmy Savile's career was at its zenith, and I met him on several occasions. So what was he like? I can do no better than Michael Burke when trailing a recent edition of Radio 4's Moral Maze. I found him singularly talentless on television, and when I had the doubtful privilege of meeting him in person, repellent. So much for De Mortuis. But yes, I was one of those hundreds, if not thousands, in the BBC who had heard about his sexual predilections. Indeed, when Sue Thompson, when I knew her a young newsroom assistant in her early 20s, described in some detail on ITV the location and layout of the BBC Leeds dressing room in which she saw Savile in flagrante with an underage girl, a chill ran down my spine. Such was her descriptive accuracy of the dressing room which I would regularly use before presenting the 6 o'clock news programme that extra weight was added to her eyewitness account. There was always something creepy about Savile. He made great play of his closeness to his mother, but to me it seemed he was incapable of closeness with anyone else on the basis of equals. But that in itself is no crime. So why did we not speak up? Well, it was a different world then. not so much in terms of public attitudes to sexuality, but more in terms of public attitude towards celebrity and respect for those in elevated positions. I had no proof. And in the absence of alleged victims speaking out and being taken seriously, Saville was able to become, in the words of the NSPCC, one of the most prolific sexual abusers ever known. The key here is in the use of superiority and the abuse of a dominant position. In law, it is known as a breach of trust, which is why there are special rules about relationships between teachers and their charges, even when those charges are over the age of consent. What made the criminality in the Catholic Church the more heinous was this abuse of trust and the consequent cover-up. Inevitably, there are people in positions of trust in dominant positions. Most know their boundaries. However, a dominant position with unacceptable sexual predilections creates an explosive mix. And the modern reverence for celeb culture, plus a glitzy environment often fueled by alcohol and recreational drugs, and the explosion goes nuclear. By the time you read this, other household names may have come to light. I don't know who they are, but I have my suspicions, just as I and BBC colleagues had suspicions 30 years ago. And I don't think it's just a BBC issue. It may well turn out that ITV has harboured as many, if not more, offenders. It will be interesting to note how they deal with such challenges.
Thank you, Robin. And Claire's going to give us two items that we have this week from Belgarum Diary, please. Thank you.
Author in the Audience is the title of this one. Little did the Chesil Theatre and cast know that there was a surprise visitor in the audience when they took their bow at a production of Entertaining Angels. As the clapping died down, it was revealed that, much to the surprise of everyone, the writer of the play, Richard Everett, was in the audience. After the show, he took part in a lively question and answer and spoke about the characters in the play, the theology behind his thought-provoking comedy and its central theme of betrayal and forgiveness. He said of his visit, "It is always gratifying to see one's work being performed and enjoyed at such a high standard, and the set, with its garden and real stream at the lovely and intimate Chesil Theatre, is an absolute triumph in stage design." And there's a picture of Richard Everett surrounded by the cast of Entertaining Angels. And our second item under this heading, Star Pips Popcorn. And if you can imagine, shall I say, doggy spelling in this. With dogged determination, Popcorn, Winchester MP Steve Brine's 9-year-old Labrador, tried hard, but to no avail. It was rough justice, but he again narrowly missed out on the top canine political prize, the Westminster Dog of the Year competition. Hosted by Dogs Trust and the Kennel Club, the competition, now in its 20th year, took place last Thursday in Victoria Tower Gardens, Westminster. Popcorn battled but was narrowly defeated by Star, a Norfolk Terrier owned by Charlie Elphick, MP for Dover and Deal. The honourable members campaigned long and hard, canvassing votes amongst their constituents before meeting the expert judges to show off their dog's devotion. Each dog took part in a doggy dash towards their MP to achieve the fastest time and to demonstrate that they were truly man's best friend. And there's a picture of Steve Brine and his faithful mutt, Popcorn.
Aww. And Steve Brine continues to star in Hampshire Chronicle this week because it is his contribution to Westminster Diary that Robin is going to read for us, please.
Recent weeks have been arguably one of the biggest decisions affecting Winchester for decades, as Carla Homes were finally granted outline planning permission to build 2,000 houses on Barton Farm. The decision came after another series of battles between the government and the developer at the High Court in London, and will obviously have huge implications across the city. Like many others, but I realise not everyone in Winchester, I view this as a bitterly disappointing decision from the coalition government. Because of the appeal system, it was always possible Carla would win one day. And now it looks like, and there's always another twist where Barton Farm is concerned, they have. Personally, I think it was becoming increasingly difficult to save Barton Farm from the moment it was identified as a reserve major development area by Winchester City Council in 2004. We can screech and point fingers as to where politically blame lies for this, but in my opinion, as your elected MP, it rests with a developer who wouldn't accept no. I have always maintained I will engage positively with Carla, and I will, of course, do so responsibly as my constituents would expect. I am also having meetings with Winchester's state secondary heads, as well as Hampshire County Council, to discuss the effect on secondary school places that development on Barton Farm will accelerate. Carla's plans do, of course, include a new primary school. A number of people living in Alresford have been in touch with me already about a proposal which would move the town and surrounding villages away from the Winchester constituency I currently represent. I think it is a balmy idea. Alresford has been part of Winchester since the 1950s, and it should remain so after any future boundary change. If you have a view either way, you have until December the 10th to tell the Boundary Commission for England. Finally, after the hot air of party conference season, Parliament is now back until Christmas, and I am wasting no time. For me personally, it was terrific to welcome Hampshire County Council and Winchester-based Wessex Dance Academy to Parliament recently to give evidence to the Justice Select Committee inquiry I am undertaking into the future of the youth justice system. What's more, last week saw the culmination of many years' work as I spoke in the House in support of the second reading of the Mobile Homes Bill. This landmark piece of legislation will bring some justice to park home residents across the country who have put up with unacceptable treatment from rogue site owners over many years. The bill now goes into committee for detailed scrutiny, and I will be working as a member of that team. As ever, much more online at www.stevebrine.com or my office via 01962 791 110. That's 01962 791 110.
Thank you, everyone. And those are our regular features for this week. And Jerry will begin with the general news.
And the first item of general news is entitled Build More Affordable Homes. Winchester Council Chiefs want to force firms to build more affordable homes as part of the district's blueprint for 11,000 new dwellings over the next 20 years. Planning bosses were accused of an expansionist agenda and warned that the vast majority of people moving into new homes would come from outside the area. But head of strategic planning, Steve Opachik, defended the move to allow 4,000 new homes in Winchester City, including 2,000 at Barton Farm, and faced down critics by telling them there is a need for more affordable housing. Under the plan, 551 new dwellings could be built each year between now and 2031, up 12% on the previous 10 years. And the council wants to change the rules, so 40% of new housing schemes are affordable or housing association properties, compared to the current 30%. Opponents say Winchester's district local plan, which has been 6 years in the making, does not provide enough protection for its priceless asset of green landscape setting and countryside. Winchester Friends of the Earth has accused the council of an expansionist agenda. However, the developers claim there is not enough emphasis on economic growth, and more houses will be needed, especially in market towns and villages. Speaking at the start of a 7-day public inquiry at Winchester Guildhall on Tuesday, Mr. Opachik said, "Planning in Winchester District is a very high-profile process about which people have strong and varied views. Work on developing the plan has therefore been undertaken in the full public gaze and has been poked, prodded and scrutinised in great detail at each stage." He said the silent majority were satisfied with the plan and the inspector's examination held no fears for the council. In addition to concreting over greenfields at Barton Farm, the plan earmarks Bushfield Camp on the southern edge of the city as an opportunity site. Half of the 43-hectare site would still be out of bounds to builders, but social, economic or environmental development could be allowed on the rest. Challenging the district plan, Robin Shepherd of Barton Willmore Planning Consultants said the district was one of the wealthiest in the UK, but the plan lacked vision for economic growth, including new jobs. He said, "If this was a school report, it would end with, 'Could do better.'" Lynn Evans of Southern Planning Practice, representing Persimmon Homes, said the target of 1,500 new homes in market towns and villages was woefully inadequate. Meanwhile, Christopher Napier, from the Campaign to Protect Rural England, said there was widespread local concern about urban sprawl and the seemingly unstoppable property development eating into green land. He went on, "It's a very rural district, renowned for its attractive countryside, much of which is of exceptionally high quality. Despite inevitable changes over recent years, a high-quality environment and countryside remains one of the priceless assets of the district." Ian White, a Save Barton Farm campaigner, said an estimated 87% of the new homes would be filled by in-migration from outside the district, a claim not disputed by officers. Council chiefs say the new housing will reduce the number of people commuting to work in Winchester, for example from Eastleigh and Southampton, with more able to afford to live there. They say the plan aims to balance the demands for more homes and employment with protecting its green infrastructure and special character. Under the plan, 5,500 new homes will be built in major new developments north of Whiteley and west of Waterlooville, plus 4,000 in Winchester City. The remaining 1,500 will be spread across market towns and villages. Bishops Waltham and New Alsford have been earmarked for between 400 and 500 new homes, while Colden Common, Denmead, Kingsworthy, Swanmore, Waltham Chase and Wickham would each get between 150 and 250. Some 40% of Winchester District is within the boundary of the South Downs National Park, which will draw up its own local plan.
Police boss hopefuls target city voters. Candidates to debate issues at meeting. The race to be the first Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner is hotting up as candidates come to Winchester this evening, Thursday. candidates will take part in a debate at the University of Winchester discussing their stance on various crime issues. The six people fighting for the position are Michael Mates, Conservative, David Goodall, Liberal Democrat, Jackie Raymond, Labour, Don Gerard, Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, Simon Hayes, Independent, and Stephen West, UKIP. Two of the candidates campaigned in Winchester last week to make residents aware of their policies. Mr. Gerard launched his campaign at the Mercure Winchester Wessex Hotel on Tuesday to around 15 people. He said the low turnout was part of a major problem with the election, that the general public knew little about it. Mr. Gerard, a retired solicitor, said, "This shows the level of disinterest and apathy and low level of knowledge about this election, which is extremely important. Policing in this county is changing more dramatically than it has been for 200 years. I'm concerned at how the government has run this election. It said at the beginning it created the job so it would be independent. But it has done all it can to make it political. To me, it's critical the police are as visible and accessible as possible. I'm extremely familiar with the law, and I would be able to say to the CPS, 'Get your act together. This is the offence, and it should be dealt with.'" He added, "If elected, he would galvanise the police to be more proactive, tackling fraud, drug offences and child abuse." Labour's Jackie Raymond, meanwhile, came to Winchester last Thursday to speak to residents angry about antisocial behaviour and potential cuts to the police. Ms. Raymond, chairman of the Hampshire Police Authority for the past 6 years, said ahead of the launch, "The Tory-led government is cutting 387 police officers here in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I am standing to protect our communities and fight crime. If elected, I will keep police on the beat, not hand over patrolling our streets to private companies, back a strong and swift response to antisocial behaviour, and be tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime." She was joined by Shadow Cabinet MP Caroline Flint and Southampton Itchen MP John Denham, who linked up with a Labour action team at a High Street market stall at 12 noon. Voting for the police commissioner takes place on November the 15th.
Appeal hoping for another record year. Young and old stood shoulder to shoulder to launch this year's Hampshire and Isle of Wight Royal British Legion Poppy Appeal. In Winchester, the branch is looking to surpass last year's record-breaking appeal, where nearly £47,000 was raised. The county branch also had a bumper year in 2011, raising £1.3 million, £50,000 more than 2010, and the fourth year in a row it has broken the £1 million barrier. Thousands of poppies will now be distributed by volunteers to be sold across the county ahead of Remembrance Sunday on November the 11th. Derek Green, chairman of the Winchester branch of the Royal British Legion, has organised the Winchester Appeal for 13 years. He said, "A lot of work has gone into it, but it is also recognition of what is happening in Afghanistan and Iraq." He thanked the Brooks Centre for providing a base for the appeal. "The appeal is always looking for volunteers, although the recent involvement of Army, Navy and Air Force cadets has been a big help." Meanwhile, the county appeal was launched last Thursday at the Army Aviation Centre in Middle Wallop. Guests included Staff Sergeant Arthur Shackleton, a 94-year-old veteran who was shot in the shoulder at Arnhem in 1944, and teenage air trooper Lear Kenny, with whom Arthur shared his wartime experiences. Colonel Peter Edick, commandant of the Army Aviation Centre, urged the public to give generously. "It doesn't matter whether they are 18 or 80. If they have seen service, they may need support, and the Royal British Legion and the Poppy Appeal raises money to support everyone and their families when they need it the most." Serving Hampshire Sergeant Major, father of two, Bernie Jenkins, said that in the 23 years he has served in the Army, in places including Northern Ireland, Bosnia, Iraq, and Afghanistan, he has seen firsthand how the money can help his colleagues and their families. He said, "It is massively important to show our support for those who have fallen, given the ultimate sacrifice, and for those who are still about, still hurting and needing help. Please wear your poppy with pride. It's a sign of support for those soldiers before us and in the future too." Lieutenant Colonel Nick Nichols, 86, who was a pilot in the Second World War, said, "The Army is like one big family. They respond, their protective arms reach out to help, and this has happened on many occasions." The Royal British Legion spends £1.7 million a week on care and support for military families, including grants, employment advice and emotional support, tribunal and inquest advice, care homes and family breaks. And with this article, there are photographs of poppy seller Helen Osborne and chairman of the Winchester branch of the Royal British Legion, Derek Green, at the launch of the Poppy Appeal at the Brooks Centre. And there's also photographs of Air Trooper Lear Kenny and 94-year-old Sergeant Arthur Shackleton in a Gazelle helicopter at the Army Aviation Centre County Poppy Appeal launch in Middle Wallop, and also veterans from the Glider Pilot Regiment at Middle Wallop.
And another item of news is concerned with supporting the forces, and it's entitled "Primary Pupils Pick Patriotic Way to Help Charities." Winchester school children took part in a colourful and patriotic way to raise money for charity this month. Children at Hairstock Primary School marked Red, White and Blue Day by donating £1 to dress in those colours. The school raised £184, which goes to three charities supporting service families throughout the UK: the ABF, the Soldiers Charity, the RAF Benevolent Fund, and the Royal Navy and Royal Marines Charity. Around 20% of children at Hairstock come from service families, and every term some see a parent deployed abroad, often for 3 to 6 months. The school also welcomed current servicemen, took part in drills, and learned to use army radios. Jackie Sankey, head teacher, said, "We're very proud of all our children at Hairstock and had a great day on Red, White and Blue Day, finding out more about the lives of our service children." The school also has a service family support worker who helped organise the event. Hairstock was one of 200 schools across the country to take part.
King Alfred remembered at Hyde Activity Day. Winchester residents helped mark the anniversary of King Alfred the Great's death last Friday with an activity day at the church where he could have been buried. There was dressing up for children in Anglo-Saxon costume, an art exhibition, and a walk round the site of long-lost medieval Hyde Abbey. Last week, the Hampshire Chronicle revealed how St Bartholomew's Church is preparing to apply for permission to exhume and analyse bones from the grave where Alfred could lie. It is a complicated process and needs to show public support for the potentially controversial exhumation. But there was widespread support on Saturday for the project. A local community group, Hyde 900, was formed to celebrate the 900th anniversary of the reburial of Alfred at Hyde Abbey in 1100. Steve Marper, its chairman, said, "We support this because our raison d'etre is to celebrate Hyde. It is central to our mission." Edward Fennell, whose initial idea Hyde 900 was in the mid-noughties, said, "We will be solving the puzzle. The grave is the last great unanswered question about the history of Hyde Abbey. Some people may be unhappy, but those bones in the grave have already been moved a lot. What we are trying to do is resolve the identities in there." Hyde 900 has said it will help with fundraising to pay for the cost of the work. Dr. Simon Roffey, an archaeologist at the University of Winchester, said, "I like the idea of a community project like this getting a whole range of people involved. If the bones are not Alfred, it could be monks from the monastery. It would be excellent to investigate that as a fitting memorial." Reverend Clive Bannister, the rector of St. Bartholomew's, does not expect to be ready to apply for permission until well into 2013. Hyde 900 has also launched a Hidden in Hyde project, which aims to highlight the use of stones from the abbey in the construction of many local buildings. When the abbey was closed and then demolished in the 1530s, stones were reused, including Old Hyde House, the Tower of St. Bartholomew's, and numerous walls. The project aims to discover and highlight the stones. And the article is illustrated by three photographs. In one, volunteer Wendy Lane, James Morton 11, and artist Sophie Cunningham Dorr at the Alfred Activity Day at St. Bartholomew's Church in Hyde. Wendy is holding an Anglo-Saxon pot from about 880 AD, and James and Sophie have stones from Hyde Abbey. In the second photograph, it's James Morton again, this time dressed as an Anglo-Saxon nobleman. And then above, that is a picture of a service for King Alfred.
Christmas card charity in need of new home. The future of a Winchester charity is uncertain as it faces its busiest time of the year. Winchester Combined Charities Christmas Card Shop opened last week with 52 charities to benefit from its sales. But the charity is losing its stockroom in Beaconsfield House, Andover Road, after Christmas, as the building, the headquarters of Community Action Hampshire, is set to be redeveloped. Charity coordinator Pam Christmas said they had nowhere to store the thousands of cards and the seven wooden stands. She said, "We're worried about our future. We need a stockroom for 10 months of the year to keep our stands and stock, and the other 2 months we use it to sort through all the cards. We need somewhere like a large garage or barn, somewhere where it's dry and there are lights. If anyone can help us, please get in touch." The charity has been running the Christmas card venture for 30 years, and recently set up shop in the City Council's Café 1871 in the Broadway. Pam added they hope to sell around 20,000 packs of cards over the next 6 weeks, raising tens of thousands of pounds with all proceeds split among the charities. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, officially opened the shop last Friday and said it was a very worthwhile cause. He said it's a fantastic idea. Christmas is a time of talking to others, and a great way of doing that is through Christmas cards. It's also a really good venue, and I'm sure they will get a great deal of footfall. Every charity involved will supply volunteers to run the shop, with 12 people working there every day. And there's a picture of three volunteers, Veronica Taylor, Jenny Hilton and Liz Harding, at the launch of the Winchester Combined Charities Christmas Card Shop in Café 1871.
Food Festival Boost for the Economy. This year's Hampshire Food Festival saw an increase in visitors, boosting the rural economy by £6 million, according to organisers. The month-long July festival, organised by county food group Hampshire Fair, attracted more than 295,000 visitors and generated an estimated £5.97 million of visitor spending for local food and farming. There were more than 70 different events hosted by 64 businesses and organisations across the county, ranging from farms, producer outlets, restaurants, pubs, hotels, shopping precincts, country shows, vineyards, breweries, farm shops and independent stores. The findings are sourced from research undertaken by Hampshire Fair, gleaned from feedback from individual festival events organisers and visitors. The 2012 figures show a 33.5% growth in visitor numbers from 2011 and an increase in revenue of 56%. Estimated visitor spend per person increased from £19 in 2011 to £23 in 2012. The increase in visitor numbers and spend reflects a growing interest in farming and local produce. The research also identified that visitors enjoyed tasting local food and drink, supporting Hampshire food and drink businesses, meeting local producers, the celebration of local food and drink, discovering new places to eat in Hampshire, as well as finding out where they could buy local food and drink. Next year, Hampshire's Food Festival will again run throughout July.
A Winchester school found several dancing queens among its students after a trip to see a West End musical. King's School took 54 Year 9 and 10 pupils to the Novello Theatre in London to see the ABBA musical Mamma Mia. It was part of a drama department trip to teach about physical theatre and how movement can relate to performance. Year 10 pupil Sophie Patterson, 15, said, "It was amazing. The costumes and set were so bright and colourful. I was so inspired and loved meeting some of the cast after the show."
Award recognises Brendan Care team as outstanding. A Chandler's Ford care home has been honoured for its care of residents. The Dame Sheila Quinn unit at the Brendan Care Knightwood won the Outstanding Contribution to Improving Learning and Performance at the Brendan Care Awards 2012. The team, who are pictured alongside the article, at the unit help residents maximise their physical activity while enjoying a healthy lifestyle and diet. It included recruiting specialists and nutritionists to help devise diets residents could easily use when home with their families.
Thank you, everyone, and those are our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. And if I may just remind you again that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And we say thank you to our editors, Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. And we say thank you also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And finally, thank you to our readers today, Jerry.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
And Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. And all of us here on this team hope you have a very good week ahead. Could you please remember to put your memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. And that's it from us this week. Thank you.